Oh, my name is Lita, and I am an alcoholic. And I'm from North Georgia. Beautiful country up there. We will be taping the panel discussion. At the end of that, the taping will be turned off, and we will open the floor for discussion. If you would, let's have a moment of silence, followed by the serenity prayer to open this meeting. Serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Tapes will be available, too, for purchase after this session, and those will be at the front as well. Each of our speakers, and we're still minus one, by the way, is going to do about a 10-minute, 10 to 15-minute presentation, and our topic today is an inside job, spirituality. And if our third speaker does not happen to get here, she is from Hawaii, and I'm not sure, I think she is checked in, but I may grab someone from the group, so if anybody is so inclined to talk on this subject... All right, she's here. Hey, Tony. Thank you, girl. I'm getting more nervous at the moment. Thank you. We're going to start off. We have Shonda C., and she is from Roswell, Georgia. She will be our first panelist today.
Hi, everybody. My name is Shonda, and I am an alcoholic. I am from New Orleans. I now live in Roswell, Georgia, and my sobriety date is July 25th, 1990. And when I was asked to do a panel, I thought, oh, wonderful, what an opportunity, what a privilege, what an honor. And when I got my letter in the mail, I saw spirituality, an inside job, and I said, oh, God has a wonderful sense of humor. And so I was talking with Hope just a minute ago because I said, oh, I see that you have your little book, and I have my book, And I said, well, I did a lot of reading, and, you know, she had done the same. And so if nothing else, if nothing comes out of this and nobody gets anything, at least I got to do some reading out of our book. I got sober at a real young age, and when I got sober, I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and began to get busy. And I think that that was one of the greatest blessings that God has given me, was that I had an extreme amount of willingness from the beginning. Although I was very uninterested in hanging around with people who were old, and for the most part, everybody, you know, when you're 19 years old, people in their early 30s are old. And so most of the people were a good bit older. And it just so happened that the place where I started going to meetings was an older club in New Orleans, and, you know, dingy, dirty, and kind of like our basic clubs are. And I started going, there were a lot of men there. There were a lot of older men. Probably, I don't know, they looked 50, 60 years old. And those were the guys who used to go do activities after the meetings. And so after the meetings, we'd go to coffee, and on occasion, there would be somebody else there. And as I started to branch out and go to different meetings, because what I thought was that willing to go to any lengths meant that I was willing to go to any lengths. And so I would get in my car, and I would drive 60, 80 miles, and I would go to meetings and go to meetings and go to meetings. And you know, God allowed me to be able to get in my car and go. And I was filled with fear, and I didn't, you know, I started to hear this talk about God, and I started to hear this talk about spirituality. And I don't know if you guys are anything like me, and you think and you think and you think and you try to make sense out of things that you can't make sense out of, you wind up struggling inside. And I couldn't understand, you know, religion, spirituality. People say it's different, but I don't think it's any different. And I had gone to Catholic schools growing up, and so I knew about prayer and I knew about God in the sense of from the Catholic religion. And I hadn't been close to the Catholic religion other than what was deemed necessary while I was in school. And so when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was told that I needed to do certain things. And one of those things was to get down on my knees in the morning and to pray. And I didn't know how I was going to pray and what I was to say. And my sponsor started me out real basic. And I think like a lot of us are told, and I was told to get down on my knees and I was to ask God to please keep me sober that day and to please be with me and to help me to act like a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And at the end of the day, I would get back down on my knees and I would thank God for a day of sobriety and for another day to get to know him better. And so that's how it started out. And I didn't have much of a relationship with God. I think during that first year, when I got scared and I was filled with fear, which was basically all the time, I would call on him and say, please help me. And what saved me was that I went to lots and lots of meetings and I got involved and, you know, did lots of service work and started out real basic with cleaning ashtrays and mopping floors and doing things like that. And it kept me in the rooms and it kept me responsible because I had commitments and so I didn't have a choice. If I didn't feel like going to the meeting, I knew that the coffee needed to be made, so I had a commitment and I had to go. And I believe that somewhere at around 2 years sober, I was in so much emotional pain because I was going to meetings and I was kind of, I was doing like all the activity, but I hadn't really formed a relationship with God and or not the type of relationship that I was going to need to be able to walk through life with some sort of peace. And at about 2 years sober, I wanted to die. And I didn't like who I was, and I was unhappy with sobriety, and I knew that I was not happy when I was drinking. And I don't know, I didn't know what to do. And I went and I met with this lady, and she told me that it was time to start working on that relationship. And working on that relationship meant that I needed to start putting in time, because like with any other relationship, if that relationship is to grow or to be a part of my life, then I have to put in time. And so it started out with 10 minutes of meditation. And that's about all I could do at the time. And 10 minutes of meditation led to 15 minutes. And today I'm up to about 25 minutes. And spirituality for me has been about action. And I say that it's been about action because it's been a lot of faking it until I make it. And I still have to do that today. The bulk of my sobriety has been doing things that I didn't necessarily want to do and keeping commitments that I didn't want to keep. And in the very beginning, I would call my sponsor in the morning and I would tell her, I don't want to go to school today. And she would say, well, you have to go to school. You know, get up, get on your knees, get dressed, and call me when you're dressed and ready to walk out the door. And so I would do that. And by then, I would be ready to start moving, and I would get out the door, and I'd go to school. And then when I finished school, I didn't want to go to work. And it was the same problem. And I would call her up in the morning, and she would say, well, get up, get dressed, get your clothes on, do your prayer, do your meditation, and call me when you're ready to get out the door. And eventually, you know, doing enough of those little enough of those types of patterns and behavior, I wound up able to walk through difficulties or walk through challenges that I wasn't willing to walk through in the beginning. And when I got sober, my mom was really, really, well, she had married an alcoholic. My father was an alcoholic, and they were divorced, and she had a real problem with alcoholism. And so when I got sober, she and I started to, well, we had lots of problems before, and I was really ugly and really nasty, and really, I was really, really hateful towards her. And I was real angry because she left my dad, and my dad was like my buddy. And I had to go live with her, and she was a disciplinarian, and she was a real parent. And when I got sober, I got kind of self-righteous. And I thought that she now owed me, you know, because I was sober. And our relationship continued to suffer a whole lot for the next few years. And we would say such ugly things that I can't even believe, you know, looking back, that I would say the things that I would say. And as time has gone on, you know, it's all about those little bitty actions. You know, I was told that one of the forms of amends that I was to make was to go to her house and to go do a half hour of cleaning and to leave her house and to not say anything. And so 3 times a week I would go to her house and I'd let myself in and I would clean, do dishes, whatever, and I would leave the house. And sometime later, sometime prior to that, I had to start making financial amends, which I did. And she didn't want the money, and so I gave it to my stepdad. And my stepdad was more than glad to take the money. I started calling her and asking her how she was doing, and I stopped talking about me, and I stopped telling her about how I felt and about what I wanted and what I thought, and I started calling and asking her how she was and if there was anything that I could do for her, and was she happy. And when I tell you that I used to get in her face and I used to scream profanity at the top of my face and up to the top of my lungs and scream this profanity, and tell her that I hated her, and I don't know what kind of God there was to give me a mother like her. And that carried on for years and years, you know, probably into the first year of sobriety. And I told her that she wasn't capable of being a mother, and she didn't know the first thing about being a mother, and nobody would have wanted. And, you know, and it was just horrible. And a couple of years later, our relationship began to become tolerable. And somewhere in about 3-4 years of sobriety, we began to build a friendship. And my sponsor has given me so many different exercises, and exercises that I didn't necessarily want to do, you know, because I don't like giving of my time. That's one of the things that I really don't like doing. And so when I have to give of my time, I'm not usually happy with it. And so I had to make a commitment to meet with her and go to lunch. And we would go to lunch once a week. And, it's not that I really enjoyed the conversation, but I knew that it was just another act of discipline that I needed. And so I would get together with her, and we would go to lunch. And as time has gone on and years have passed, my mother has grown to absolutely respect me, and I absolutely respect her. And she's my best friend, and we do things together. We talk on the phone, and we have this relationship like I don't even see that a lot of people have. And I just think, you know, how can it go from the point where it went to the point where it is today? And I love her with all my heart, and we almost lost her about 6 months ago, and we were in the hospital, and she'd been coming in and out of ICU. Blood transfusion, so on and so forth. She'd gone in for a regular little surgery, and there were some complications. And the doctors had prepared us, and I had been there, and I wasn't on too much sleep, and people, the women from AA, were coming in and coming out and coming in and coming out, and it seemed like it had been a year that I'd been in the hospital. And I went outside, and I talked to God, and I said, you know, thank you so much for giving me such a wonderful mother and for allowing me to be able to get to know her. And I said, and she's yours. And I thought I was going to die. I really did. I thought I was going to die. And I said, well, she's yours. And she's on her way to recovery right now. And she's at home, and she doesn't have any tubes in her anymore. And I'll be flying out in a little bit, and I'll be with her this weekend. And even that last episode that we had while she was in the hospital brought me to a, because I don't read the Bible, and I'll just go ahead and close with this, and I don't read the Bible, and I don't have necessarily a form of religion that I practice, and she reads the Bible. She started to read the Bible about a year ago when she wanted to start getting better. That's the way that she reached out, and we were in that hospital, and she would come to, and she was drugged up and strapped to the bed, and had been intubated with tubes all over, and she motioned, and she wanted me to get her Bible. And so I got her Bible, and Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me that regardless of what I think and regardless of what I believe, that it is important for me to act a certain way. And it was important for me to be loving and open-minded enough to grab her Bible and to read to her. And, you know, I don't know that that's really of my nature or that that's who I really am, but God has afforded me the opportunity to become that type of daughter. And that's what the journey of spirituality, that's one of the gifts that I've been given. And with that, I'm going to go ahead, and I think Hope's coming up next.
Hi, my name's Hope, and I'm an alcoholic. And Shonda, I had to count on my, figure out the years, and I got sober November 1st of 85. And it has absolutely been a wonderful, wonderful journey for me. And one of the things that Shonda was talking was, let me hear what she's saying. Don't let me just think about what I'm going to say, because whatever I say is what I say anyway. And my sponsor always says, you have what you plan on saying, what you actually say, and then what you think you should have said. And, you know, I know today when I drive away, I'll think, oh, why didn't I say that? Why didn't I say that? Why didn't I say that? I forgot to say that, you know. And but there's, and as she was talking, I love to hear people's stories. I just love to hear recovery. And, you know, when I think, like probably all of us, when we saw an inside job, spirituality, one of the things that I always say is that's one of the hardest things for me to talk about. Inside, I know. But for me to put into words what has transpired in my life since putting down that drink and becoming an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's just absolutely, truly a miracle. I love this fellowship. I really do. I'm very, very active in it. My husband has 19 years. My sister has 17 years. My mother has 15 years, and I'm 6 months below her. So I was the last one in the family to come in. Yay! And so, you know, it has touched all areas of my life and my family. And my sponsor says, you know, if you don't have the fellowship working in your family, you know, you have no program. And I do believe that. Maybe it's just because I'm very blessed at having everybody in. But I think that the most damage that I did was definitely to my mother, my father, and my sister. And actually, my dad, before he died 23 years ago, he had 9 months. So if I think alcoholism isn't a family disease, I'll tell you what. So if you have anybody still out there in your family, don't ever give up on them, because my family never gave up on me. And the last time my mother came over and she saw, and she had just had come in, and I think she probably had a couple months, and she brought over a big book, and she was going to do some 12-step work on me, and I threw the book out that door. I gave her some choice words, and she left, and I think she must have gone to an Al-Anon meeting, because she did not call. Nobody called. I was completely by myself, and what I realized was, you know, people were not going to put up with my behavior anymore. They had had it. There was nobody that came to. I lived alone. I was totally isolated. And I shared at another meeting earlier. Last night, we all went to dinner, my mom and my husband. And the waiter just said, y'all are such nice people. And that, you know, that is an inside job. That is what, to me, it's about. To be a person who is kind, who is nice, who has integrity. I came in here as a liar, a cheat, and a thief. You know, that is what I aspire to. Today, those things aren't in my life, you know. And it's from, you know, my husband and I talk about, what if we only had the first step, that we came in, we knew we were powerless over alcohol, and our lives were unmanageable, but we didn't have anything else. You know, where would we be today? I never would have been able to do forgiveness. I never would have looked at myself to blame for what I was blaming the whole world for. You know, being able to find a God that I personally understood. Not anything anybody else was telling me about, but a God that was comfortable inside of me today. You know, to realize it was my behavior that needed to change, not anybody else's behavior. their behavior still hasn't changed much, but no, not really. It's greatly changed, but nobody can teach me to change. I can't teach them to change. And, you know, making amends, making a list of character defects. As I try to tell the women I sponsor, it's good news to find out your defects. I mean, I really, truly believe that today. It's good news because then I can do something about that behavior. You know, I can change that behavior. And, you know, and then being able to carry the message to me. You know, I guess at about 5 years, I really realized that one is I felt like I had the foundation of the fellowship, the foundation. You know, I realized that I wasn't a drunk anymore. I was in recovery, and I was becoming a different person. I was a different person to who I came in today with 14 years ago. And I continue to grow with that. And then to be able to, you know, the spiritual awakening is in the book Under the 12th Step. And that's what I had to do. I think that's really where, when I went through the steps a couple times, I realized that I had a spiritual awakening. It's little things. It's not the big thing. It's not the burning bush. It's not, you know, the earth's not going to shake because I feel like I have a spiritual awakening. It's waking up in the morning and saying, good morning, God. Waking up and saying, being pleasant to people. You know, not being unkind. I mean, I think that so much of that comes from inside out. And one of the things that I really believe, because my husband and I have been talking this week about, you know, what should I say? It's a hard topic to me. And he said, you know, life proceeds from inside out. And I so believe that. And I guess about 7 years into my sobriety, I started having, I don't know, I was just became very, very discontent. And I talked to my sponsor, and she said, well, try to find some outside stuff, because she and I had talked and talked, and things weren't lifting. And I went to this wonderful person, and the very first thing he said was, how's your prayer and meditation? And you know what? It was out the door. It was gone. I had everything in the world that should have made me happy. A wonderful husband, a great job, which I've had since I've been in sobriety. I love what I do. And that's what happened. It was the prayer and meditation. You know, I had that hole. It wasn't as big as when I first came in, but there was a hole. Something was missing in my life. And since then, I have gotten into a nightly meditation, which I absolutely cherish. I have this little herb pack with lavender, I think, in it, and I put it on my eyes, and I hold my hands up at night, or lay them down, because until I turn them over, you don't go to sleep. And I have this wonderful meditation that I just feel so peaceful and so loved and rested. And I go through my day to just kind of review the day to see how it went. And, you know, I end up counting my blessings. You know, it has been a great gift to me to get back into the meditation. I'm also a runner, so I don't have a morning meditation to sit, but I do run, and I get to see the sun rise. I get to be alone with God when I run. I usually plan out my day, and I do a lot of gratitude. I thank Him for my simple, wonderful life. And it's such a good feeling, because when I drank, I never thanked God. I never counted my blessings. It was about what I didn't have, what I could get out of somebody. And it's such a different way. And it's from the 12 steps. You know, it's from this fellowship. It's by not drinking and being a part of this to clean house, to get at peace with myself, to get at peace with me, God, and the world outside. And it is from the inside. Another thing that one of the lines that I just love, once again, from my husband, I promise I'd quote him. And he told me, try to get it right, would you? I said, okay. So I wrote it down so I couldn't mess it up, just in case. But he had his part of his thing, and he said I could share it, is, you know, when he first came in recovery, he was going to all these churches, running around, just frantically looking, you know, where is it, where is it, where's the answer? You know, now that I'm sober, where is it in all these churches? And he finally went to one minister, and he just said, you know, If you don't find a temple in your heart, you won't find your heart in a temple. Isn't that neat? So if you need to write it down, I have the word straight. And I just love that because it's so true. It's in my heart. And if I have it in my heart, I have a temple. But no matter how frantically I'm searching outside stuff, I'm not going to find it. But I have found it in these rooms. I've found it with Alcoholics Anonymous. And I never dreamt that if I just didn't drink and I became a part of this fellowship, the many, many blessings that I would receive. Thanks, everybody. Have a great conference.
My name is Tony. I'm an alcoholic addict.
Hi, Tony.
And I'm here from Honolulu, Hawaii. And thank you both for sharing. My sobriety date is January 28th, 1983. And, you know, I was sitting here listening to both of you, and I thought about this quest for spirituality that, you know, I got through these doors. I didn't come through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous to treat people to get sober. I checked myself into a treatment center in 1983 to get out of a relationship and to save a job I had for 16 years with no intention of getting sober. And, you know, and I have to say that someplace in that, checking into that treatment center, a grace happened, you know, to me. I had to get drunk. I wrote a bad check. And I went and bought a bottle of rum, and I got drunk to get the courage to go to the treatment center. And so they told me to go sleep it off a little bit, and they woke me up to feed me, which that's one of my favorite things, you know. So they woke me up and fed me, and I met all the people in the treatment center, and same folk. Now, why that impressed me, I don't know, but it still does, you know. So anyway, but something happened right there, because for the first time in my life, I got that unthinking feeling of, what have I got myself into now? And all the fears and all the hurts and all the anger and everything happened for me, and I started to cry. And it wasn't the type of crying that I'd ever done, because, see, I grew up strong, and you took care of stuff, and you just didn't do that. And I couldn't start. It was horrible. It was weeping, you know, kind of hysterical. And I couldn't stop, and it was like just all of that stuff came out, and I just cried and cried and cried. They had to give me Valium, you know, just to put me to sleep. I just couldn't stop. And 2 days later, I claimed sobriety because they said I had to be claiming sober. And by the grace of God, I haven't had to take a drink or drug through there. So I know God just granted me this because I'm a questioner. You tell me to go left, I go right. I mean, there's so much stuff that I learned about, you know, myself in these rooms. But the thing about it is, I got in here and I knew that there had to be something greater than me that was going to have to keep me sober. So I checked out of this treatment center, and 60 days later, I reported for a job in Honolulu, Hawaii. Now, this is what's major. I was 40 years old, and I never lived alone. And I left my 3 kids and husband about 6 or 8 months prior to getting sober. And so I was kind of out there all alone, didn't have any place else to go. And I ended up in Honolulu, Hawaii. And again, you know, I count that as a grace. The first or second weekend there was what they call a roundup. And it was out on the beach at Mokulea. And I was sitting on a wall looking at the ocean and looking at all these sober people having fun and playing volleyball and stuff like that. And I said to this God, whatever it was, and said, you know, if they can do it, maybe I can too. And, you know, and again, a grace was granted. And I got involved, and I got really involved in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And about 7 months later, I got into this home group that was real service-oriented called Malia. And they had these roundups on the beach and their campouts on the weekend. And so I remember going to this campout, and in there they talked about, this man with time in the program had talked about the good being the enemy of the best. And that no matter how much we do in Alcoholics Anonymous, we can always do better. I'm doing good today, but I can always do better. So out of that evolved, the group of people that were in our home group decided, or one of the gentlemen decided, to start a step study for people with time in the program to rework the steps. And it was different because he held it in his home, and he took the 12 by 12, and they would go over paragraph by paragraph, and they would share their experience of living the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was 7 months sober when I checked myself into the step study on Friday nights, and I learned so much. But I think the reality here is that those words came off that wall, and I listened to how people applied these steps, the spiritual foundation, in their life. So I thought, now I'm really seeking, like I would seek a drink, the spirituality thing, because I had no idea what you were talking about. I was given the same words you were given, you know, get on your knees in the morning and, you know, ask God for help to stay sober and say thank you. And that was all I could do, you know. In the step study, as we got through the steps on the 11th step, we went on a retreat, and it was a weekend. And it was a silent retreat. Now, I love to talk. So the thought of being in this environment for the weekend, of 36 hours of it, you know, of being in a silent retreat was just terrifying to me. So we got there on Friday night, and Harry was the man that was running it, and he went over the 11th step and the prayer of St. Francis' prayer. And he said, you know, if you can't do anything more, but concentrate on each line of it and just, you know, kind of do that. So they left food out, and we could go get food when we wanted to. I always know where the food is, you know. So anyway, as we went on through this weekend, I was walking down the beach, and I walked so far, and then I turned around, and I started walking back, and I was like following my own footsteps back down the beach, but then there would be places where the waves had washed in, and there would be no footsteps, and then they would start again. And it dawned on me, this was like my life I was walking back. And those times when there was nothing near, those are the times in my life that I had turned away from God. And it scared me so bad I started to cry. And I went up this hill, and there was a man standing there that was in my step study. And all he could do is, we couldn't talk. And so he just kind of hugged me. He saw me crying. And he just kind of hugged me and patted me on my shoulder and said, you're going to be okay. You're going to be okay. And so I went into the room, and I wrote down these words. And I don't know if I'd read them before or where they came from, but it was my reality for that moment. And it said, I am but a grain of sand on the beach of life, and I am but a drop of water in the sea of eternity. And it let me know that I wasn't that important. And it let me know that there was something greater than me out there. And, and the quest began. You know, I tried all the things that I was told to do, you know, in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, because this grace had been shown to me. I tried meditation. I've tried, you know, so many things, you know, to get this conscious contact. But I know on a daily basis that this is a grace. And that, you know, you hear we're chosen, we're really lucky. You know, I had to walk through everything I had to go through to get through today. And being sober for 17 years is such a miracle. It's amazing, you know. I got busy in Alcoholics Anonymous over the last 17 years, and I'm a service junkie, and I'm a convention junkie. I take it back. I everything I do is the same way I tested that drink and drug. I mean, I go at it head on. Now, service in Alcoholics Anonymous has to be the most spiritual experience you will ever have. You know, I swear to God, you know. It is, you know. It's learning who I am through you, you know. And it's learning to love you and accept you as you are, as I learned to love and accept myself as I am. You've taught me so much, I can't even begin to tell you. And this, again, is my opinion. And I have to tell you, the most spiritual part and the most difficult part of being spiritual in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is living in today. It is the hardest thing that I have. Because if I am in this moment, and at this time, and it's right now, everything is perfect.
in my world. I don't stay here very often. I don't stay here for very long. but I am graced on a daily basis with that, because each encounter that I have with you is for now, and that's it. And that's all I know, not very much. I'm still questing. I'm still seeking, I'm still learning to learn more, and to come at peace. I really say, that quantity and quality have nothing to do with each other. Today, if I've got my sobriety has to do with that peace inside, so I'm as sober as I am peaceful for today. And some days I'm drunk as hell. It's self-created too. That's the thing. I watch this behavior and I watch it. So, but I really feel that's all it is. And again, I don't know. I don't know. I tell the women I sponsor, I said, you want to work a 10th step? How you know you work the 10th step is when you go to bed, you put your head on the pillow, and you go to sleep. If you haven't cleaned up the wreckage of today, watch out. That head goes, at least mine does. Da-da-da, and it starts. And I had this sponsor, and I just loved her. And what she used to say is, she said, when I lay down and my head's doing that, I sit in the bed and I holler, shut up! I talk to myself, and she says, I ask myself, what can I do about any of this right now? And I answer myself, nothing. And then I ask myself, what can I do right now? And she says, I can go to sleep. And that's what she does. And do you know that stuff works? Because I've tried it. But again, there's some grace of God in there. There's something different in there, to make that stuff work. You told me to make God boxes to turn stuff over. I do that. I tell the women I do. Again, I think sponsorship is another gift of spirituality, because it's through that gift that I learn so much. The women that sponsor me, and I swear to God, that's how I feel about this relationship. I tell them I don't have any advice to give them. I tell them that, like I was told, that I have all the answers and all my truths inside. And the two things that I tell them that I suggest that they do is to ask God and to write, because that's how it was given to me. And I find out how stubborn and how I don't want to learn or be in spiritual contact when I don't want to write about it. And that's the truth for me. So, because each of those truths we have, we all got in these rooms from different places and different circumstances, we're all so different. And yet we have that common bond, which is the grace of God. Thank you.
This is a miraculous program, and God works in mysterious ways for me. I know I'm your chairperson, but I have to share with you, too. I came into this program in 1979, and I worked a lot of the things that were suggested to me, and I stayed sober for a lot of years. And I've heard so many things from these three panelists today. I stopped doing the basics. I stopped doing the prayer and meditation, and I stopped sharing. And I stopped the inside work, and I got drunk. I have 4 years today. When I received the phone call to come down here and chair this meeting, I thought of what my very first sponsor told me. All day long yesterday, I kept thinking, I can't do this, I can't do this. And I am nervous, but you know what? I'm sober today. And through the inside job that I'm working today with sponsors and sponsees and doing that service work that's so important, God allows me to do anything I want to do. And this is part of it, is sharing with all of you Sobriety is great, guys.